Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at hearstranch.com.
I'm Allison Kane, and welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building consumer brands from the ground up. I love doing this show because I get to interview everyone from production gurus to marketing and social media mavens, anyone who can guide me on this crazy journey. This is the story of building Haven's Kitchen sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce.
Today, we're doing something a little different. So if my voice sounds unusually deep, that's because it's Adam Brown stepping into the host seat to interview Allie about Haven's Kitchen, new line of aioli. This is kind of meta for me, as this is my favorite podcast that I listen to religiously. And now I'm on it, and I'm playing the part of the student, and Allie is the teacher this time around. I just want everyone to know I'm honored to have been asked. For those of you who don't know me, I'm the founder and president of Circle Media, a social media agency that specializes in helping CPG and beverage brands win online and in-store. We work with brands like Harvest Snaps, Bobo's, Chomps, and Ripple, to name a few, on social media strategy and management, influencer support, and best-in-class micro-content creation. Enough about me. Let's focus on the real star of the show here, Allie Kane. Welcome, Allie.
Hi, Adam. Thanks for having me. By the way, that part that you added that wasn't in the draft was very, very sweet. Thank you. I'm glad that
absolutely.
You love it.
Absolutely. I do. How are you feeling being on the other side of this?
I'm feeling good. I have, as you know, a lot to say, and I'm a little long-winded sometimes, but I'm so freaking psyched about this product. And I think it was you who a couple of weeks or months ago when I said, like, who should I be getting this out to? And you're like, get it out to your audience. I was like, that's a very good idea. So I'm thrilled to talk about it. And I also think from a sort of in the sauce educational perspective, there are real lessons to share here and real learnings that I think will be beneficial to people listening. It's not just like me talking about my product because I love it so much.
Well, let's start with your product that you love so much. You just launched. Yeah. You just launched this, and why did you make it? What was the process like? Like, just give us a sense of what's going on with you.
Yeah. Well, we made it because we were always going to be platforming. So while we've had the fresh sauce as like our primary line, and that's the one that we, you know, has been on shelves since 2018. The idea was always to have a whole line of kitchen and pantry products that make cooking more fun and easier, more flavorful, better for you, et cetera. The question was always like when and what. And I think when started becoming clear to me about 2 years ago, like, okay, it's getting time. Like, you got, it's time. I wanted to make sure that we had people that loved us. I wanted to make sure that we had the right team in place, that we had, you know, enough sort of understanding of supply chain, product market fit, all of that. And then the what was like a really fun process because it's sort of this combination of what are our competencies and that Venn diagram with what does the market kind of need and what are our consumers telling us that they want from us. And so it's aioli. That's what we came up with. It's a really cool, like easy squeezy, creamy, but plant-based, you know, lower sodium, lower sugar condiment, zero cholesterol. So it has all of our sort of assets. But as you've heard me talk about before, it doesn't have the challenges of not having a category in the store, and it's shelf stable, yay, which makes it easier. It's a simple sort of message as opposed to chimichurri is a little different from ginger miso, you know. So I think we took a lot of the things that we learned. We kept all of like the really great stuff, and then we made this, and we're very happy about it.
And is it a pivot away from fresh? Is it, how are you reconciling fresh and shelf stable? And was the next decision on the platform, it had to be shelf stable? Was that like definitely one of the building blocks?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think that it wasn't always like the idea was at some point very early on, my strategy was like, own the fridge, right? Like own condiments in the refrigerator. Let's make, you know, spice blends. Let's make chopped garlic, and let's make, you know, let's have a line that is in a spot where the consumer is going. We all know the perimeter is, you know, better for you, and it has that halo, and it's not impacted by e-com as much and all of the things, right? Except then COVID happened. And the big thing that kind of happened, I think, from our perspective with COVID vis-a-vis like the supermarket is fewer resets because labor is so much harder to find and so expensive, and less investment into sort of restructuring and rethinking the refrigerated sets because they were very focused on obviously the most important things, which were toilet paper, hand sanitizer, rice, cereal, you know, the basics. And then you have this sort of economic shift that happened where people are really feeling challenged at the supermarket and they see their bills going up. And so those premium refrigerated products, while we're still growing, it's not quite the trajectory that we thought there would be in 2019. I still think that's going to happen. But in the meantime, I kind of changed strategies again, based on the market a little bit, and really want something shelf stable. We just have seen how hard it is, you've heard me, to do so many things because of the fresh supply chain, but it's not a pivot away, it's just an additional product. So we hope that they work together, that the people that come in through fresh know our integrity as a brand and are excited to try our shelf stable condiment. And that the bulk of people who come into the condiments are like, oh, there's also this like premium fresh cooking sauce that I can use, harder to find, probably natural channel for now, but that they work synergistically.
Yeah, and I think people think this just happens like you just came up with this yesterday and now you've launched it right ahead of Expo West, but like you've been working on this for over a year.
Yeah.
How is the innovation process? Like, walk us through that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, it starts with what are our core competencies and what is our consumer sort of saying to us? So one of the things that we are really keen on is, you know, we like to use social nature, right? So social nature is fine if you just use it as like a sampling program, but it's really good if you use it as an insights program. And so every time we did a survey, it was, what do you want from us? What can you see from us? You know, what is the most compelling thing about this brand to you? And it was always like great flavor, right? Super bold, like, you know, globally inspired restaurant flavor, better for you, convenience, those three things. And so those three things are like the three top pillars. We have also versatility diet, we have sustainability planet, right? But those three things are what consumers want. So we start from there. And then it becomes, you know, supply chain. What have we learned? You know, we learned that in our six fresh sauces, I think we have 56 unique ingredients. Very, very challenging for an operations team. Some of those ingredients don't grow sometimes because of the drought or the rain or the Suez or whatever. So like, I didn't know any of that in 2017. You know, and so you learn, okay, let's try to keep it a simple supply chain. Let's try to have a base formula and then just like add flavors to it. So, you know, that it's fairly straightforward. That also makes it easy from a use case perspective. Again, like I said, messaging, you know, what kind of co-packer do we want? there are a couple ways to make shelf stable things. We knew that, like, from a values perspective, we really need flavor and like that fresh, good, high quality taste to be forward for us. So hot fill was out, too much heat was out. There is what we do is a flash heat. So you kind of keep all that flavor. I think you've had them. Like, they're very bright for something shelf stable. And then again, it goes to, okay, so we've kind of solved for some operations things. We know that we want, you know, a product margin higher than 60%, for instance. We know some things going in. And then sales, you know, market, where is there a white space? Where's there a hole? Where's there like a lot of kind of like room for improvement? What hasn't been really innovated on in a while? You know, and then again, there's marketing. So what can we message? What makes sense to our community? You know, how do we kind of like use this in conjunction with our other things? You know, how do it, does it fit with our messaging in general? Will it be like, why are they making a cookie? You know? Yeah. So it's, you know, it's very cross-functional. And that's before you even start whipping something up. And then I started whipping something up in the kitchen, and then we sent it to our partners who actually are like food scientists. Is this possible? Can we make this? Can you put it in a pouch? Can it be shelf stable and still taste this good? All of that. So yeah, it's a long process.
So that was going to be my next question. Before you go to a food scientist, did you put in all those inputs? Like, I know from past mistakes or just past trials and tribulations, certain ingredients cannot be in, certain yes. ones can. And then you ask, can they formulate it at scale? And then is yes. there sometimes a no? They're like, absolutely, mm-hmm. we cannot. And so you have to start over.
It's not usually a no. It's a, we can, but just so you know, this is not going to be like, I wanted, for example, I wanted the jalapeno aioli to be bright green. Never, ever, ever going to happen. Like, you will not get a bright green the minute that you add heat, even if it's just a little heat, because it just, you know, it takes the color away. It doesn't take the flavor away, takes the color away. So that's a no, that can't happen. But, you know, it's usually with ops, it's really funny because it's usually like not that's impossible, but it's more like, here are the three things that, you know, you could do if you wanted to do something like that still are scalable and workable with the costs that you want.
So. Right. I think in some ways, it's almost like you're a second time founder, even mm-hmm. though it's within your own brand, because you're like, hey, I've made mm-hmm. these mistakes before. So, hey, partner, here's the inputs. Whereas totally. If you just came up with something in your kitchen and you're like, here's what I've made. Everyone tells me they love my jam or my aioli or my dressing. Mm-hmm. And then they have to figure out, how could we ever scale that? You totally. Have some learnings and some scars that put input into launching a new line, which is different than just like a new flavor.
Yeah. And actually in a couple of weeks, I think at the end of April, it's either at the end of March or the end of April, I have the guy who runs the Helmsman Group, which is our food scientist innovation partner, coming on the podcast to talk about that process, because you're right. I mean, in 2017, I literally took the sauces that were like we were teaching in the school that I have in my cookbook that I make at home all the time and put them in pouches. And I was like, I basically tried to scale a fairly unscalable process. Now you learn really quickly that for like, you know, consumption among the world, like you can't use fresh garlic. You can't use fresh ginger because they're like very sort of spory and like pathogen harborers. So you know almost from the beginning that like things are going to have to change. But we tried to keep it as close as possible. But you also learn a lot about like acid and pH and, you know, all of the things that I'm talking about with heat, right? And what makes something actually safe and high quality that has a shelf life? How do you get a shelf life? All of those things. And I think, yeah, you're right. I also learned, you know, the use case for Romesco is a little different than the use case is for the edamame green goddess or the coconut cashew. And my assumption was people are going to take these things and do what they want with them. I'm just giving them a really good high quality flavor that they would have to make, you know, take a lot of work to do at home. But that's actually not how this business works. And I've learned that over 5 years. It's, you have to be very, very, very clear what to do with it. And so we're really trying to build that into not only making the product and having it all be sort of, you do the same thing with all of them, but into our messaging also. So yeah, I do feel like a second time founder.
Yeah. And this may be simplistic, but I just think as a consumer, aioli to me sounds like something that would be on a sandwich or included in something when I went out for food, as opposed to the pressure for me, not a chef, of using your core products in the kitchen. And I wonder if that's a conscious or subconscious upside of like, yeah, the more average person will understand the usage case.
Totally. Which is funny because like the whole purpose of the fresh sauces was to alleviate pressure like on home cooks. Like that is literally like my mission in life. Right. And, and yet somehow these products actually are like, wait, what do I do with them? That is the number one complaint we hear is I can't find them, which drives me absolutely fucking bananas. The number two complaint is what do I do with them? And even though we have like literally hundreds of recipes on our website, it's still not very obvious and people still feel that pressure. So yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, we were in between a cooking sauce, like a shelf stable cooking sauce, like a simmer sauce or a stir fry sauce, and a condiment. And we're just like, you know what, like, the way that people are cooking these days, the way that people just want like that fast, easy, fresh flavor, let's just give them something that they put on top. You make a sandwich, like you said, you can make avocado toast, you can dip your carrots in it as an afternoon snack. You can heat up last night's things and put our sunshine chili on it. And it does taste, it elevates it, but it's also, it's even easier and less pressure. And so, you know, that is a key tenet of ours. So we're really leaning into that.
I think you made a good choice. I was on a podcast with Gabby from Magic Spoon years ago with Mark Samuel. And at first they had XO cricket protein bars.
I know. Yeah.
And that was an education component. As big as it is outside of the US, no one ever did it. And so he's like, whatever I did, keep it simple, stupid. It had to be so simple. And he just looked at cereal. And he's like, people know cereal, so we're just going to, and sometimes that's what it takes. I think you made a good choice between the two.
Thank you.
So talk to me about the best and worst of times. What was the highlight of the last year plus, and what was a dark day or a dark moment?
All right. I mean, I will say the best of times is when you make an amazing thing that's never been invented before. Like, there really is something so just life affirming, literally, about creating something that's absolutely delicious, that truly is better for you, that people love. It's kind of amazing. I would say the worst of times is, you know, when you just don't know if the like stars are going to align, right? Like there's so many near misses. Everything has to work in conjunction. I'll give you an example. You know, retailers really want shelf ready samples. They used to, you know, several years ago, you could put like a little aioli like in a bag and like write masking tape aioli and send it. And they'd be like, this is great. Love it. Now they have, because of the fewer resets, because of the lower margins, because grocery is like feeling the heat, they really, really have to make sure that every single square inch that they give to a brand is more productive than what they're taking out. And so they're not going to take a risk on something that doesn't have a package. But in order for us to print packaging, we have to have a PO. Like we can't just go and make 30,000 pouches, and to make fewer than that is really, really expensive. So what, you know, all of the timelines have to be right, where you have so many external forces from production, ingredients, logistics, retailers, that sometimes they just miss each other, and it's really sad and frustrating. You know, this business in general is kind of filled with a lot of, you know, I don't know. Did you see that the NVIDIA founder, he had this video on, he was interviewed by the Acquired guys, and basically they were asking him, like, you know, if he would do it again and if he would like launch another company. And he's like the third most successful CEO in the world. And he said, no, it's literally too, it's too hard. Yeah. And, you know, not to whine, 'cause we have it great. You know, we always talk about that, but, you know, for every 20 worst of times, there's one like, yay, there it is. And then it's on to the next problem to solve. But the best of times is like, you know, what a gift. We're making something that never existed before. Never existed. We figured something out, and people are like loving it, and it's giving them joy, and it's making their lives better in some small way. And I have this team that like all works like in unison to make it happen. That's the best of times for sure.
Did you have... Obviously, you have investors and people in your camp. You probably even have more than most, just given how much you give to the community. Did you have a lot of naysayers or just people being like, you're crazy, don't do it? How did your team support you? What was your sense of that?
No, I mean, I think, you know, so from an investor perspective, again, this was always, I mean, probably my investors thought I didn't platform early enough. If I'm like, they haven't said that to me. Well, one of them said that to me. Like, I dug my heels into fresh, trying to create a new category, probably for a little longer than maybe someone else would have. I think I saw in my sort of like early stages of entrepreneurship, I saw brands just launch new things too quickly and like platform out too fast. And it never seemed to work. And I'm always kind of like, how do they have 100 SKUs? Like, what are they, how is this possible? They're not really doing anything if they're doing everything, as opposed to like a Bachan, which is just like, he is super laser focused on that sauce. And that is his model, you know? We always knew that there wasn't enough of, you know, there, I guess we couldn't scale the fresh the way that you can scale something like that. So we always knew that we wanted to have other things, and that's why it's Haven's Kitchen and not Haven's Fresh Sauce, right? It's always been like a pantry brand. So I don't think anyone thought it was crazy. I think a couple of people were like, why aren't you just doing what you do in fresh in shelf stable? And that I think I answered earlier. I had some real thoughts about that based on our insights. But for the most part, everyone was just very excited that we were doing something new, because as you know, this is all about momentum. And so when it comes to the team, they have something new to sell. They have something new to market. We have Amazon at, you know, as a possibility. I mean, we can sample and send to influencers, which we've never been able to do because it doesn't do anything for us. So it's like, I think the team is over the frickin' moon, you know, and I think investors, they're certainly not bummed that we did it. I think they might have wanted me to do it earlier. And there might have been a little question around what exactly we launched. But now, I mean, everyone's very happy.
Amazing. Well, sometimes timing, right? We had a pandemic thrown in there, changing user behavior. Yeah. People went out of store, back to store. There's just a whole whirlwind of things. And so,
well, I was listening today and I was, you know, Apple, I guess, has been like talking about making like a car for the last 10 years. And that was always, you know, that was like in their strategy, they project whatever. And they canceled the project. And, you know, a lot of people are like, that's crazy. How can you cancel a, how, you know, but that's what strategy is. Strategy isn't meant to just be like, now I'm going to go down this road and no matter what happens, it's like, did you ever see The Office when Dwight and Steve Carell are in the car and the GPS is like, make a left. And they make a left and it's into a, like a river. And you know, yes. Like you can't just, you have to be aware of what's going on around you. We had a massive pandemic and a massive sort of like global economic situation. God knows what we're even calling it. And, you know, and people are eating and cooking differently. The pandemic has its sort of like headwinds, but also many, many more people are eating breakfast and lunch at home. And so they're looking for quick ways to make their egg sandwich a little bit more fun than their egg sandwich yesterday. It used to be really dinner. Now it's everything, you know, and they're nibbling all day long. So a condiment to me that just feels like really easy and yummy and just like you don't have to have as much guilt about because it's got zero cholesterol, you know, it's like, why wouldn't we add our sort of Haven's Kitchen-y-ness to that?
Totally. I find I end up eating mostly boring foods and the condiment mm-hmm. is like the thing that spices it up, literally.
Totally.
So I'm a buyer. You don't have to tell me. On that Apple example, my question yeah. is, did you ever consider pulling the plug? Were you ever far along? You were like, I might stop this. And what, how'd you reconcile that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think, I would say, I don't know. I mean, I'm just going to speak for myself. I think everybody in my position at some point considers not doing this anymore, not specifically about the aioli, but about the business. Sometimes it just feels like too big of a mountain to climb. And, you know, I think I'm very sort of spongy and I sort of pick up on, you know, things going on in the zeitgeist. And it became kind of clear to me. I don't know. I mean, first of all, it felt very bubble behavior to me when things were just exiting for like, you know, ungodly, you know, sort of numbers right. that didn't really make any sense and that things were getting funded. I mean, there's still things getting funded, honestly, that I am just like, when do they ever think they're going to get a return on that? But
totally.
So for us, you know, we're in this very tiny margin business. I make a very high quality product. So I'm going to have like very tight margins. Even if I'm super successful, I'm probably still going to be on this fundraising like treadmill for a while. And my goal has to be to get to scale, which is like tens, if not, you know, close to $100 million of sales. And that feels very far away sometimes and starts to feel like a little indulgent sometimes. Like, what are we even doing here? And I think if we're honest with ourselves, probably most of us feel that way at some point. The only thing that I thought about was, you know, if we don't have retailers that show real interest in this, like I do like to have a customer before I make a product. And if we don't get any interest, if this is just me thinking this is going to be really fun and groovy and it's going to be another, you know, there's no category or, you know, uphill battle, then maybe I'm a good innovator, but maybe I'm not necessarily a good like CPG entrepreneur. But there was. And so that definitely made me feel more bullish.
Well, I'm glad there was. And I'm glad you stayed
yeah,
on that mountain.
Me too. Thank you.
So, okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
I'm Adam Brown, and I'm back with Allie Kane talking about Haven's new line of aioli. I want to hear a little bit about this launch. So you teased the line on LinkedIn about a month ago, offering free pouches to your community, to people like me. Then you announced the line on LinkedIn 2 weeks ago. That announcement had over 300 comments and 20 reposts. Did you orchestrate all that? Tell me a little bit about this.
Well, you know a little bit about this because you were one of the people I sent an email to. So Anouk from Belgian Boys does this sort of thing. It's like the flash mob for LinkedIn. It's much more organized and it's very well done because everything she does is organized and well done. And mine was a little bit more like the night before. Hi, random friends. Like, I think I sent, 30 emails or something. I'm going to post about this thing tomorrow. It'd be really great to get some momentum. If you're comfortable, here's a couple of things about the company. Here's a couple of things about the new aioli, or you can just repost us, or no pressure. I don't like necessarily being told what I should put on my feed. So whatever. And it was really amazing. I mean, people, you know, I don't even know, I didn't go back and see who actually did it, but I do feel like it was a very, on your end of it, do you feel like you saw a lot of it on LinkedIn? Like, do you feel like, were you like, oh, that's what she was doing? And oh yes, I see it happening in real time.
Well, I knew exactly what you're doing. And I appreciated your sort of like half-hearted ask, because I think that's true to your personality. You're like, I don't want to, but you've given so much. It's Gary Vaynerchuk's jab, 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 right hook. Like, this was the time that you cash in on the right hook. I don't know how many people partook, but it seemed like a lot of people did. And it crushed on my LinkedIn. Like, it did, it performed very well. Generally, positive energy in CPG does really well, more than negative, which is one of the reasons I'm in this industry. And it took off. Totally. But I wonder, you must have seen an influx coming from everywhere. How was it on your end?
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. I sound like one of those. I was humbled and like honored, whatever. I was actually, I was. I felt, you know, a couple things. One is, you and I have had this conversation. I'm really uncomfortable with anything that sort of smacks of self-promotion or, you know, I don't know. I find a lot of it really, inauthentic, I guess. And just all tone deaf. I don't know. I don't know. It's, maybe it's just like me being a Gen X person and my mother being like, you only want to be in the paper when you're born and when you die. You know, did your mother tell you that? Yeah.
I never heard that one, but okay.
So, you know, I'm uncomfortable about it. Right. But going back to my team and this product, like, well, what the hell am I doing then? Right. Ultimately, my job is like chief momentum officer in a way. Right. Like, with buyers, with consumers, with investors, that's my job. And if I can't ask people I consider to be like at least sort of like supporters, colleagues, friends, to say something nice about something that we've worked really freaking hard on for 2 years, then like I need to get over myself. So I did. I was incredibly happy with, we got reposts from people that I didn't put on that list at all. They were just like genuinely happy that we were doing it. And I think that speaks to sort of this other piece, which is, you know, I don't know, again, going back to Acquired, they talk about this concept of like brand love, right? Like, and what is brand love and what, how do you know brand love? And it's like when people want to be a part of your brand. And I'm not saying that we're, you know, like Nike, but I do think that there are a lot of people that want to participate in Haven's Kitchen. They feel it in their bones that there are real people that we're working hard, that our intentions are good, you know, that we're making something that we feel proud about, and that we're doing it to make them feel better and to help them create better experiences in their kitchens. And part of our disconnect as a brand, candidly, over the last couple of years has been that there are more people who want to participate in Haven's Kitchen that can't, because they can't just buy it on Amazon, and they might not live near a Whole Foods. And when they do, they can't necessarily find it because it's in different parts of every store. So they're frustrated. And so the last thing I want is a frustrated consumer, but I do think that we have people who want to participate in our brand. And I think what I felt overwhelmingly that day, and then the next day, and then the next day, was that people are engaged with us more probably than even by our product, which is interesting to me. So that was really nice. And my team was obviously thrilled.
And I think you shouldn't sleep on the efforts you've been putting into building your own personal brand, which even though you're not dancing around like Jake Carl's in Midday Squares, you're not like such a face of the brand. You really are.
Yeah.
And those reps pay off in these instances where people want to partake in the brand and the packaging and the products, but also can get behind the founder, which is not really the case for everyone else. So hopefully you feel that.
No, I mean, you know, the whole like idea of a person being a brand is still really off-putting to me, or a personal brand, I guess. I think that I really, I have a lot to say. And I think as I've gotten older, I've just felt more compelled to say it. And as long as there are people who it resonates with and who find it helpful, I'm happy. You know, I'm never going to be like, this is my beauty routine in the morning on LinkedIn, right? Like, I don't think anyone cares. But if I can talk about, you know, lessons I've learned along the way, or, you know, have a podcast, you know, that just interviews people who've been in it longer than I have, then that's fun for me. And hopefully, you know, value added to the community.
Hopefully you keep doing it. That's what brought us together. So let's talk a little bit more about the rollout. So you launched it on Amazon with a code, but I noticed it wasn't on your website till this week. So what was the what was the plan there? How'd you map that out?
Yeah, well, the plan was, okay, cool. You know, our first ship is March 4th. We're going to, you know, post it on... you know, we're going to tease it on our email, and we're going to get a, you know, sign up list, and we're going to like tease it on social, and then I'm going to announce it on LinkedIn, and then we're going to have an Amazon code March 4th, like today or whatever. Right. But then fortunately, great news, we got this Nexty award nomination for like the best new pantry product, which again is like awesome momentum. Probably less meaningful if you're not a buyer, but very meaningful because buyers, that is, they, a lot of them start there, like with the nominated products because they've already been weeded out. So I was like, hey team, guess what? It's not March 4th anymore. It's February 21st, because if they're announcing it, we know that they send this email to their whole community and they have like a little slideshow and they're going to have a picture of this thing that no one has ever seen before. And we're going to totally miss our opportunity. Like the cat will be fully out of the bag and not controlled in any way by us. So the last couple of weeks were just a massive scramble. I mean, getting the Amazon thing going, we couldn't get the website. Like it, we just couldn't. So it, that took a minute. So we kind of called it like a little beta launch essentially on LinkedIn. And that's why I was like, use this code, because even if you search for it on Amazon, you're not going to find it. By the way, I do have a code for people. If you go to our website, Ashley gave this to me, and you use the code POD, capital P, 25 at checkout, you will get a 25% discount on our Aioli on Amazon. So use this
nice call
code.
To action.
POD 25 CTA. And it's a reward for people for listening this deep into the conversation. But yeah, so it was, the plan was a great plan until it just wasn't. And then we had to figure things out and, you know, everyone just hustled. I mean, making PDPs, you know, all of it, like, you know, it, nothing is just simple. Nothing.
Totally. Well, fair enough. Seems super strategic on my end. So well played.
Thanks.
So let's go back to the stores. This is one that I always think is interesting, right? So, you know, the retailers are key. You're like, I wanted to go into this with a customer up front. Like, how do you sell into a retailer? Do you go to your current refrigerated set buyer and you ask for an intro? Like, how cold is it? Are you starting on second base because you're already there? Do you start over? Give us a sense of that.
Yeah. It depends on the retailer. Whole Foods, we have a really great relationship with. We started at Whole Foods. They are very invested in our brand. We do incredibly well there. So when I went to, you know, Whole Foods, and then I went to sort of like the higher sort of people at Whole Foods and said, you know, we have this new thing. It's shelf stable. We want it to live in condiments. We were able to meet with the condiment buyer who consequently left, and then the new condiment buyer. Even when you have a very warm intro, you are completely on your own from there, right? And even if you're doing really well in another part of the store, it might not necessarily align with the goals of that part of the store, or it might not make sense. Or in our case, they're not having a reset of condiments until next year. So, and that again goes to, like, you know, fewer and farther between resets. And so fortunately for us, our new condiment buyer really loved the Aioli, which is great, and is cutting us in, which is essentially, we're not going in at a reset. We're going in kind of with a couple of other brands where they're touching the set a little bit, but not doing a complete revamp of the shelf, into our home region, which is like our, we just kill it in the Northeast and Florida, next month. And then we have to obviously prove ourselves out, just like always. Those velocities have to be like cranking. And then we'll hopefully be global the following year. But so that's an example of like a really warm one. Target, we're also going into Target. Another really interesting story, because we did not do particularly well with the fresh sauce at Target. I ended up pulling it just because I felt like it wasn't a great anything. You know, I think people who hear me are like, if it's a marketing thing, make it a marketing thing. If it's a sales thing, make it a sales thing. But if it's neither, it's really neither. And it was nice to say we were in Target with the fresh sauce, but it wasn't moving fast enough. We had to promote it too often. They weren't really built for it. The set wasn't really fleshed out. Like, there were issues. And rather than just like sinking more money into something that I had a feeling wasn't really going to pick up for that time frame, I just, you know, parted ways, which I think they were fine with. But right. Here I am going to another part of the store and saying like, hi. So I know that one wasn't stellar for you. Like, you're going to look at the numbers, you're going to see the brand. Like, I can't pretend like we weren't there. But this one, and here's why. And our buyers at Target absolutely loved it, like loved it. And this was without a shelf ready pack. I mean, it was amazing. I have to say, just shout out to her, because like when we did get that Nexty nomination, I sent it to all of our buyers. And she was like, not surprised at all. Best condiment I've had in a long time. You know, I mean, it just feels great. So, those are two very key retailers to have on board and signed up with purchase orders coming in. Right. That's why we're, our first production and our first ship was March, because to get on the Target shelves in April, we need to ship. And so then, like, you know, without getting too much in the weeds, once you, we also work with Rainforest, which is a like regional distributor. Right. They were very happy to have it. They're going to just like flood all of the like, you know, Northeast, you know, regional, natural mom and pops, et cetera. Fresh Direct, we do really well there. So they were on board from the beginning. And then, you know, everyone else, you're just, you know, you're proving yourself out. You get a couple of like the KHE Next program is super into us, you know, so they're launching us in three of their regions. We still have to get pull from stores, but we're in and we're coded in those DCs, which is great, because when we go to Expo West and we have stores saying, you know, I want you, when can I get you? And if we don't have codes for their DC, or we're not, you know, stocked in their DC, it's just a dead lead. So it's a weird game. That's why I love Amazon too, because I don't have to, you know, I like wooing these buyers and I feel like I'm doing well for them on their shelves, but there's only so much they can do if the next reset is in 18 months and I need to get this product out into the world before that, you know?
Totally. Second time founder wisdom, even though still with the same brand. I love it. So the rollout seems to be going well, knock on wood. And now you're playing in like a new sandbox, like new competitors, maybe Unilever, Kraft Heinz, just different different lineup of potential brands or big conglomerate brands. Does that change anything for you? Does that cause concern for you? How do you think about that?
You know, it's like I don't know. I was listening to this. I think I just listened to a lot of podcasts, but it wasn't actually a podcast. I was reading that Peter Attia book about, you know, longevity.
Outlive.
Yeah, Outlive. And he was talking about how we all basically, all we do as like Americans that work out is work like our hind muscles, basically, like our whatever they're called. Like we're walking uphill, we're climbing stairs, we're running. And he's like, as you get older, you really need to work on the downhill stuff, right? Because you don't want to fall and you don't want to trip and you have more stability. And so I just feel like it's the same leg, but a different muscle. So, you know, our problem right now is we have no competition. Like even when we look at our spins data, we've been number one in our spins category for 2 years, but we're competing with brands that aren't actually in our set at the grocery store. So when we give our buyer that data and we're like, we're number one, like they're like, I don't, this data isn't that relevant to me because I don't carry sauerkraut in my set, right? So, you know, that's that challenge is, you know, there's no real category. We can't really give you apples to apples comparison. This game from, you know, right now, especially, it's what Adria from Malk said that was so smart. It's all about incrementality. If I'm taking this thing off the shelf, your thing has to make more dollars or more units than that thing, period. And so we can't, how do we even, we're, it's like very hard to show that in fresh. With Aioli, you know, our premise is like, yeah, we're probably going to be, you know, premium to like a Hellmann's Sriracha Mayo, but we're going to bring more dollars per square inch to you. We're going to, our velocity is going to be strong and our price point is going to be premium. And that's going to translate to incremental in that slot. And that is interesting because we're, you know, I don't think, you know, I don't think Kraft Heinz or Hellmann's is particularly worried about us. I don't think Unilever's like, ooh, but it does put us in like a different world a little bit. And I think, you know, also if you think about innovation, in condiments, this is what's been really resonating with the buyers. What's resonated with condiments buyers is generally like these very global flavors that aren't necessarily platforms, right? There's a bachan or a fly or, you know, one particularly really good Indian, you know, curry sauce, whatever it is, but they're not really coming into the primal kitchen space or the Sir Kensington space or, you know, the chosen food space. And we are. So it's kind of an interesting place to play. And I think there's definitely room to take some share away from some of those guys. I mean, for sure. So yeah, different set of muscles. The data is going to be really important. Obviously, we've got to perform. You've just got to perform. So we'll talk in a year.
For sure. Let's mark the date.
Okay.
So how do you, as a mom of like many, many children, how do you manage the time with you and your team amongst your children? You have your anchor historical line and this new line. How are you splitting things up?
I know. I do that too. I'm like, I don't want the older child to feel like I'm super obsessed with the new baby, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, I think one thing we learned from Simple Mills is like when they have a new product, that is what's on their homepage. Like, yes, you can still get all of the other Simple Mills stuff, but when you look at like what they're promoting, what's on their social, what's like front and center, it's their new thing. And I think we're really trying to, we are not taking our pedal off the gas when it comes to promoting in store or resources toward fresh. We're still merchandising it. You know, we still have people that are dedicated to like supporting it. But when it comes to like outward messaging and where is the momentum coming from, it's obviously coming from the new product. So we, for example, like at Expo West, we are not having fresh. First of all, it's just such a pain in the ass. But second of all, like everything's about aioli. And will people be like, wait, I thought, did you make your thing shelf stable? Like we know that people are going to have questions about it. And we'll have a couple behind the counter if any buyers really want to try it. But this is about aioli. And the goal is that, you know, I think part of the joy a little bit of having waited this long to platform is that it's not set it and forget it. But we have a lot of people that are just, they're buying chimichurri every week. They're buying their ginger miso because they make their ginger miso salmon every Tuesday night. And so we might not see a ton of influx into the fresh, although I think we'll see some because people will discover us now through this other product. And we're not going to do a social nature campaign or, you know, we're not going to do any sort of big marketing pushes for fresh. But right now it's all about aioli. And I think that's good from my resources perspective, from my team resources perspective, but also from like a consumer perception. Like they need to hear what this new thing is and they need to understand it. I think most of the people, I mean, I'm kind of curious because I feel like a year from now, I don't know how I'm going to ever do this research, but I would guess that over half of the people who know about Haven's Kitchen a year from now know it because of the aioli. Not because of the fresh, because of the distribution.
I think that's a fair bet. But I think that the tide will rise for all products. If you make delicious, flavor forward type things, and that's the way you get them, they can come backwards. Yeah. It's harder the other way. And the refrigerated set is so difficult. And then it comes down to sampling. You know, somebody works in social media, the ability to get samples out, to gift influencers. You've never really had any of those levers to pull. And this really unlocks introduction to your platform, SKU agnostic.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I think we can wait it out. I mean, I'm still very bullish on the perimeter of the store. We have a great spot there. We have real brand trust. Like we make great products. I think everything's cyclical, as you know. I'm just not going to necessarily be like throwing my elbows around and like creating a new category in a time where the grocery stores are just like under massive duress. So let's make a quicker, easier product. Let's just get that going. And then when the tide shifts a little bit, you know, sort of macro wise back to fresh, we'll be in pole position. And this year we're going to spend time, you know, we're going to do some packaging work. We're going to do some supply chain work. Like, we're going to be in a really good spot again, like a year from now with that fresh line, where I think it's going to be even better because of this experience, because it's time to take a good look at it and jazz her up a little bit.
Totally. And I think that they don't cannibalize each other. They both have place in the pantry and the fridge in the same house. One is on the go, like every day. I work from home. I'm home now most days, dressing up my meals, but spice it up a little for dinner, maybe have some friends over. They want to have something flavor forward. They both sort of go hand in hand. And so I'm hooked. I'm excited to see how that plays out. You are in Los Angeles right now. You're getting ready for Expo. Is there anything you want your listeners to know?
Come by. If you're there, come say hi. North Hall, second floor, N1635. That is 1635. Other than that, I would say if you haven't reached out to the buyers that you really want to meet and made a little targeted wish list, they are not going to give you meeting time. So don't be disheartened. They might not even write you back, but make sure that they have a flyer or something that's just like, when they're making their list of who they're going to go visit, that you are on it. Expo is just, it's not just the 4 days. It's this time before and the time after. You got to, like, you know, get every last ounce of value out of that spend. Make sure to hydrate, compression socks. It's exhausting if you haven't been there. So rest up. I don't know. What about you? What are your, how are you feeling about Expo? You psyched?
I'm super excited. This will be my third Expo West. And I never went before, similar to you. Like, I'm probably more extroverted, but I don't like to be walking around selling my wares to people. So I was like, viscerally, not the place for me. Last person they want to hear from is me. And I go to these booths and I see marketing people pitching all my clients, and that's not my game. But the guys at Interact, actually, Fred Hart, was like, enough people know you at this point, you should go. And I guarantee you, every conversation will be started by somebody else. And he was right.
Yeah.
So I did 1 day the first year, 3 days last year.
Fun.
I'm going with a bunch of my members of my team. So we're really, really excited for it. And I think we're walking your hall first.
All right.
Will be one of our first stops. Absolutely. Allie, this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for bringing me on.
Thank
you for engineering. And everyone else, reach out to me on LinkedIn, on social media advice, or just to say hello. I'm Adam Brown. Yes, that's my avatar with a red circle around it. Or at Circle Media, that's Circle with an S on any social network. And Allie will be back in 2 weeks with another episode of In the Sauce.
In the Sauce is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.